Good afternoon. You are tuned into a Juno Afternoon here for Thursday, the 9th of June, the year 2016. I'm Jeff Mountain, filling in today for Joan Pardis. Today we'll be talking with Troy Quinn about the weekend's Summer Pops concerts for the Juno Symphony. We'll talk with drum maker Margie Morris from the Seattle here for the celebration. We'll get details about the 4th of July activities for the Juno Community Marching Band. And Nancy the Trini will be here with Arts Out. That Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, Music and More today on a Juno Afternoon. With the forecast for tonight, mostly cloudy skies with isolated showers. Low temperatures 46 to 51 degrees above zero. Forecast for Friday, partly cloudy skies with high temperatures around 65 degrees. Forecast for Saturday, mostly cloudy skies with a slight chance of rain.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. U.S. Interior Secretary Sally Jewell is visiting the Spokane tribe today to commemorate its selection as a promise zone. The Obama administration announced the selection earlier this week. Steve Jackson has more about the designation.
The designation by the Obama administration of the Spokane Reservation and tribal trust lands in Airway Heights and Chewila as a promise zone is good news for the tribe, which has unemployment levels as high as 45%. The tribal chairwoman, Carol Evans, says they applied to get the designation, focusing on five areas where efforts could best be made to improve conditions on Spokane tribal lands.
To create jobs, to improve educational opportunities, that was the second one, increase economic activity, reduce crime, and to increase access to quality, affordable housing.
Evans says while the designation does not specifically provide money for those goals, it will make it easier to get financing for the projects.
We will go out and apply for grants, apply for funding from foundations, apply for maybe tax credit dollars. And what this designation does is it gives us some preference in those application processes.
Among the specifics the tribe is looking at, energy-efficient, low-income housing, expanding broadband access for education, formal accreditation of the Spokane Tribal College, and a special corporation to expand solar energy. For National Native News, I'm Steve Jackson reporting from Spokane.
At a conference taking place in Riverton, Wyoming, officials envision several strategies to address what they say is a health gap on the Wind River Indian Reservation. Wyoming Public Radio's Melody Edwards reports.
Northern Arapaho Social Services Director Allison Sage says the conference will bring together doctors, youth workers, traditional healers, and others to brainstorm solutions. He says the life expectancy of Native Americans on the Wind River is only 52 years, compared to the national average of 78 years. Sage says he'll personally offer a demonstration of horse culture, a therapy technique to help reduce suicide on the reservation, where rates are double the national average, especially among teens.
We give them a voice so they can express how they feel, and we give them a message about suicide, and then we let them ride the horse, which is amazing. And they're all smiles, and they have elated feelings, and children love it. Everybody loves it. I don't know if you ever rode a horse, but horses have a spirit in themselves.
The conference starts with a 28-mile relay prayer run for Native health that's open to the public. And Sage says the three-day conference is free, so as many people as possible can take part.
We live in a culture of poverty, and we have children here on the Wind River Reservation that go to bed hungry at night because they don't have no meal. And so we want to make sure people eat, so we are feeding them a healthy breakfast and a healthy lunch.
Sage says not only is hunger an issue on Wind River, but there's also a need for more doctors and better preventative and prenatal care. For National Native News, I'm Melody Edwards in Laramie.
A 5-foot-wide asteroid lit up the Arizona sky last week, and as Carrie Young tells us, scientists believe it landed within the White Mountain Apache Reservation.
Officials with NASA say the asteroid weighed several tons and was traveling at a rate of more than 40,000 miles an hour. They add it likely broke up into smaller pieces once it entered Earth's atmosphere. No structural damage or injuries from the event have been reported. The White Mountain Apache Game and Fish Department says despite several searches, they have not yet found any of its remains. Staff there add that hasn't stopped meteorite hunters who are not tribal members from entering the area. And so far, they've cited several people for illegally accessing tribal land. For National Native News, I'm Carrie Young.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. And by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C.
Support by the National Indian Education Association, the only national Native organization representing Native students, educators, families, communities, and tribes. You can become a member at niea.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
It's 6 minutes past the hour, and you're on Tune 2 in Juneau afternoon. Our next guest is the music director for the Juneau Symphony, Troy Quinn. Troy, thank you for coming down.
Pleasure to be here again, Jeff. Excited about this weekend's concerts activity.
And this is going to the stage and screen.
It is indeed. We're doing a tribute to the film score with everything from Jurassic Park to Breakfast at Tiffany's Henry Mancini tune. This is something for everybody. I'm so excited about it. It's actually probably one of my favorite concerts of the season. So looking forward to bringing it to the community.
What do you think accounts for its popularity?
Well, I think it's accessible, Jeff. You know, this is symphonic music, but it's the soundtrack of our lives. We've grown up with this. I certainly have. And I think movie music is still very relevant, and great movie music has the capacity to move people separate from the visual. So this is kind of a unique opportunity to experience it in the concert form without the visual, and kind of appreciate its beauty in and of itself just from a musical standpoint. So we're playing all the hit tunes, and even if you don't know some of these composers, like the name John Williams, you've certainly heard his music in your lifetime. So
of all the gin joints in this movie career,
yes.
Why did you pick the ones that you picked?
Well, I think it's an eclectic mix. It's a great challenge for the orchestra. You know, we're playing Jurassic Park, and that's actually not an easy piece, but it's also very well known, as well as Star Wars. But I wanted to get a great variety of pieces that not everybody knows. So while we have some of the headlining blockbuster hits such as Back to the Future and, like I've said before, Star Wars, we also have some, well, maybe not as well-known gems, such as Somewhere in Time, a John Barry score, who most people know for Goldfinger and the Bond movies, Out of Africa, he also won an Oscar for. But Somewhere in Time is probably one of the most beautiful melodies of all time, no pun intended, and I think not so many people are familiar with it. So we've got a wonderful mix of the familiar and the not-so-familiar.
Some of these people are fairly prolific, like John Williams and Ennio Morricone.
Indeed, and Ennio Morricone just won his first Oscar, if you can believe that, for The Hateful Eight, but he's been nominated several times for the Spaghetti Westerns, and, you know, John Williams is, of course, the most nominated living person in the Academy history, only behind the great Walt Disney. So these people are very excellent at their craft and also produce this absolutely gorgeous music, and I'm so excited to bring it to the community. And this is for everybody, you know. People, I've been talking to people on the street saying, well, I've never been to a symphony concert before. You know, would this be for me? I said, this is the concert for everybody because it's absolutely accessible and you're going to love it.
Are you familiar at all with the filmmaking process?
I am, only because I do quite a bit of studio work, background vocal and conducting back in Los Angeles, where my other home is. So I am familiar with this whole sort of synthesis between film and music. And, you know, studying at USC, of course, with the wonderful cinematic school, the process is quite an art. And it's a whole other art to develop music to the cinema, because all of those sorts of hits have to line up between the film and the music. So that's what's very complicated, which the audience might not know. From a music standpoint, these arrangements of music have to be specifically arranged for the concert hall. Because when you were watching Indiana Jones and that famous scene where the ball comes down, you know, there's a couple of filler seconds in there that actually doesn't go into the arrangement that you'll hear in the concert hall. So there has to be some sort of give and take in the film where everything has to line up exactly precise. And in the concert hall, we can arrange it to just, you know, showcase the melody and the theme, thematic material. So it's a totally different process from presenting it in a musical form to presenting it between film and music.
Are the musicians watching the movie when they're recording the
thing? You know, they aren't actually. The only person that's watching is the conductor. So, and sometimes if I've done anything to live film, I'm watching the screen with a teleprompter, basically, a track that's giving me the beats. So the musicians actually don't see anything that's going on. All of the musicians do not see the screen at all. As a matter of fact, for the recent Star Wars, the Force Awakens film, we have a couple of people coming up who've recorded on that back in Los Angeles, which is great. Some of our visiting musicians we bring in to augment our wonderful local symphony. And so they've been up here a couple of times. They've recorded on that specific album, and it was so tight and hush-hush security that they weren't even allowed to see it. There was a black screen over it. So the only person that sees it is the conductor, which in this case was the great John Williams.
What's on the playlist?
Well, we've got everything from Gabriel's oboe, an Ennio Morricone piece, which may not be familiar to some people. It's a beautiful oboe solo from the 1986 film, The Mission. We also have Breakfast at Tiffany's, Charade, and Two for the Road, a Henry Mancini medley that's going to be absolutely breathtaking. And we've got 80 musicians on stage, Jeff. We've got everything from harp, piano, five percussionists, and we're playing all of those John Williams tunes, as well as a couple of surprises, such as John Barry, Somewhere in Time, which not so many people are familiar with, as well as Pirates of the Caribbean, that famous Klaus Badelt and Hans Zimmer piece. And that's a wonderful about 8-minute medley. So we've got something for everybody.
How does one get into the business of making a theme?
That's a great question. It's certainly a gift I do not possess. You know, composition is a very difficult thing, especially for this screen. And take John Williams, for instance. I've heard many interviews him talking about he writes at least a minute of music a day, even still that prolific at 84 or 85 now he is. And so you have to be inspired, and I think a lot of these film composers do not see the film until it's at the end of the process, once it's edited. Then they have about a month to go back and write the music before they actually score it. And most of that takes place in Hollywood and London and elsewhere. But so they really have a very short amount of time. So the idea is to get some inspiration from the actual film that they're seeing and talking with the director. It's a very collaborative process. And from a conducting standpoint, it's actually a greater challenge but humbling because, you know, you've got some of these scores in actually Henry Mancini's writing and Ennio Morricone's writing. They did the arrangements themselves. So it's quite interesting to see their actual notes. And in one particular piece, Moon River, which I'm sure many of you will know from the Blake Edwards film Breakfast at Tiffany's, there's a moment in there where he has in the score my solo, Hank solo. And he doesn't even dictate it out. He just improvises it. So that's quite humbling to have that sort of score in front of you. But it is a less direct process. There's a little bit more guesswork in terms of what people do, and not everything's written out as it would be in a classical score.
What is it, show?
I'm sorry?
What's the show?
Well, the show is on June 11th, this Saturday, at 8 p.m. at the JDHS, and Sunday, June 12th at JDHS at 3 p.m. You can get tickets online at the Jack, at Hearthside, and JunoSymphony.org. And we also have a few pay-as-you-can tickets. So if you're concerned about the prices and you have never been to a symphony concert, this is the one for you. Again, that's Saturday, June 11th, and Sunday, June 12th at 3, as Saturday's performance is at 8 at JDHS. Come and enjoy yourself. It's going to be a great night out.
Are you doing a pre-concert talk?
I'm actually not doing a pre-concert lecture for this. I'm going to be interspersing my lecture in between the pieces. So it's a more informal sort of concert. We'll perform a piece. I'll talk a little bit about it, recognize some of the musicians, and point out some things that you'll be hearing, and a few trivia tidbits, and a grand finale surprise you won't want to miss.
Trey Quinn, thank you so much.
I'll leave you at that. Thanks, Jeff. Thank you.
a theme song from Jurassic Park, excuse me. In the studio with me is Margie Morris. She's here for its part of celebration at Vendor next door at the Juno Arts and Humanities Council, Juno Arts and Culture Center. First of all, Margie, could you introduce yourself, please?
My name is Margie Morris. My Tlingit name is Shayek, and I was born and raised in Seattle and started dancing when I was about 19 years old because of Pete Burrell, who's Tlingit. He had started a dance group down there and encouraged everybody to learn their songs and dances. And I'm Raven Frog from the Kiksati, and I'm really glad to be here.
And you're here with about 35 or 40 other artists.
Yes, there's numerous artists over at the Jack, and some really great talents over there, like Merle Anderson, who does the Haida weaving and dolls and just beautiful work, and Zach Boxley, who does the Bentwood boxes and drums, and numerous other artists that do regalia. And it's just really great that there are so many people that are still keeping all our culture alive. I make elkskin drums. I buy the whole hide and the rims, and then I go ahead and cut out as many circles from the hide as I can and go ahead and cut out the lacing for the back out of the elk skin and put in the holes and soak them overnight. And the next day I'm able to make about 4 or 5 drums. And depending on the weather, sometimes takes up to a week to dry. And then I'm able to go ahead and draw out designs in pencil and paint them with acrylic. I do form line designs. I had taken my first form line design class from David Boxley about 32 years ago. And so he's a great inspiration, being able to go ahead and try to help Native people learn proper form line design. And hopefully I'm not disappointing them at all.
Now you're from Seattle. It must be exciting to see all these.
Yes, I live in Edmonds, north of Seattle. And I really enjoy coming up here every other year to be able to go ahead and see all the other dancers and artists and bring up my drums and go ahead and sell my drums for dancers. It's really great.
You're a certified tribal artist. Could you explain what that is exactly?
Up here in Alaska, they have the Silver Hand, and Alaska Native artists are able to get those so that show that the work is authentic Native art, because there's so many knockoffs everywhere. And I asked about that, if I could go ahead and get the Silver Hand, but because I didn't live in Alaska, I wasn't eligible. And Tlingit and Haida went ahead and started this little copper design for Tlingit and Haida artists to go ahead and be able to show that they are certified Native artists. And I'm the fourth person to go ahead and be registered with them, so my number is 004.
What's the importance of the drum in Native culture?
The music and everything is, it helps people go ahead and be together, and it's so great. You go ahead and see the elders out there, and I mean, there are so many elders having a hard time walking or anything, but you get the drums going and the singing, and all of a sudden they're forgetting their aches and pains, and they're able to go ahead and be revived by the drum. And it's from the oldest to the youngest, that's just within the heart.
Now, when I went over to your booth today, I noticed you make different sizes.
Yes, I make drums from 10 inches on up to 20 inches and have different designs painted on them. The different designs usually are the different crests, family crests, to go ahead and show who you are. With the Tlingits, we follow our mother's side. And so I'm a Raven Frog Kiksati. And so my mother and grandmother and so forth were Kiksati.
How How long does it take to make a drum?
The first day, I go ahead and cut out as many as I can and cut all the backing that's about the thickness of a shoelace. And the larger drums, that takes about 4 or 5 arm lengths worth. And the smaller ones are about 3 to 4 arm lengths of for the stringing. And then soak them overnight. The next day, I'm able to make about 4 or 5 of them. Then you have to go ahead and let them dry, which can take up to a week. Then go ahead and draw out your designs. And the larger drums, it takes me about 2 days to paint it.
You brought your drum with you, I see.
Yes, I brought one of my drums with.
That's loud. You want to sample some drum music, please? Okay. Archie Morris performing right here in the State ATO Studios. Is there anything you'd like to add? I might have forgotten to ask. You mentioned Alaska Airlines.
Oh, there's different representatives over at the JAC, like Alaska Airlines and other different groups. And it's really nice to be able to go there. And if you have any questions or need any information from Sea Alaska or Alaska Airlines or any of these other people that are there representing their areas, it's really great to be able to be one-on-one with people.
What are the hours for the fair?
From 9 o'clock until 6 o'clock.
Today only?
No, it's today, tomorrow, and Saturday.
Archie, thanks so much for coming by.
Gunashchish, thank you for having me here.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday, the 9th of June, 2016. It's the birthday of the man who wrote the lines, "Of all the types of men I've met in our democracy, I hate the most the athlete with his manner bold and brassy. He may have hair upon his chest, but sister, so has Lassie. Oh, I hate men." Written by Cole Porter, who actually did not hate men, and who was born in Peru, Indiana, 1891. He wrote, "I get a kick out of you, you're the top, let's do it, let's fall in love." His career as a composer was seriously affected by a terrible horseback riding accident he had in 1937, when his horse rolled and crushed his legs, and he refused to have a leg amputated, and so lived with terrible pain for more than 20 years. Continued to write songs, but never at the same rate of success. It's the birthday of the crime novelist Patricia Cornwell, born in Miami, 1956, author of a whole series of crime novels featuring the feisty forensic pathologist Kay Scarpetta. The Kay Scarpetta series, known for its gory attention to serial killers. Cornwell says a lot of components go into creating a monster: cruelty, savagery, callousness. Do we all have that in us? I suspect we do. We can all do pretty bad things if we don't pay attention. Cornwell, the second biggest selling female writer in any genre behind J.K. Rowling, who created Harry Potter. It was on this day in 1860, we believe, the first dime novel was published. It was called Malieska, The Indian Wife of the White Hunter by Anne S. Stevens, published by Beadle and Adams. Early dime novels were wrapped in a salmon-colored cover. They actually cost 10 cents, and before long the phrase dime novel was used to mean any cheap melodramatic pulp fiction. but Louisa May Alcott published more than 30 of them and earned some good money from it. So did Theodore Dreiser, Upton Sinclair. And it was on this day in 1870 that Charles Dickens died. He had a stroke, fell off his chair at the dinner table. He had asked to be buried in an inexpensive, unostentatious, and strictly private manner. But he was buried in Westminster Abbey. Early in the morning, only 12 mourners, but the grave was left open for a week, and thousands of people came by to throw in flowers. And the tombstone was ostentatious. It said, "One of England's greatest writers is lost to the world." Here's a poem for today by Robin Robertson entitled "Waves." I have swum too far out of my depths, and the sun has gone, the hung weight of my legs a plumb line, my fingers raw, my arms lead, the currents pull like weed, and I am very tired and cold and moving out to sea. The beach is still bright, the children I never had run to the edge and back to their beautiful mother, who smiles at them, looks up from her magazine, and waves. A poem entitled "Waves" by Robin Robertson from Slow Air, published by Harcourt and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetrymagazine.org. And by LegalZoom, resources to help protect intellectual property, including trademark, copyrights, patents, and independent attorney consultations. Legal help is at LegalZoom.com. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
It's about 30 minutes past the hour, and you're on 2-2 Juno Afternoon. I'm Jeff Brown. I'm a host for today. Our next guests are Sarah McNair-Grove, the president of Juno Community Bands, and Amy Bibb, conductor of the Summer Band. Thank you very much for coming down to the station today.
Thank you for having us.
For people who do not know, could you describe what the community bands are, please?
Okay. The Juno Community Band is a group of adult players who that like to play wind instruments and get together and play band music. We had our start probably about 40 years ago with a group of men that wanted to have some music in the 4th of July parade, because they stood on the corner one year and said, "There's no band." So they got together some friends and put a band together for the 4th of July parade, and that has been going on for about 40 years, get together about once a year. About 5 or 6 years ago, we decided that we would like to play some more, a little bit more challenging band music. So we now have a concert band that plays during the year, but we're here today to talk about the 4th of July band.
Amy, you're the conductor.
Yes, I am.
What does a conductor do in a situation like this where everybody knows the music anyway?
Well, we just run through the music. You tell everybody when to be quiet, tell them when to start and when to stop. It's a relaxed band.
How many people are in the band?
This year is kind of small. We have only about 15 right now, so that's what we're here to ask.
Yeah, we're here to get some of you musicians out there to come and join us. There's still time to come and practice with us before the 4th. We would really encourage you, if you haven't played with us before, to come and try it out. Juno just loves to celebrate the 4th of July, and this is really just a nice way for us to give back to the community in their 4th of July celebration.
So we're offering some extra sessions for people who feel like, oh, I haven't played in 40 years. I don't know if I remember how to play. So we're offering extra sessions outside of our regular band practices. So that'll be Tuesday, Thursday mornings at the Faith Lutheran Church, 10 o'clock.
Is that the band camp?
Yes, that's correct.
And the performances themselves, when are they?
The performances are the 29th at noon, which is the Wednesday before the 4th, and the 3rd at 3 o'clock, which is the, well, Sunday. And those will both be down at Marine Park.
Mm-hmm. What are you going to be playing?
We'll be playing a lot of old favorites, Washington Post and Stars and Stripes Forever, and we put in a few new stuff, new band repertoire, and we always put in a few pop tunes, and it's a fun concert.
Do you have any routines? Do you ready to go around in circles and stuff like that?
No. We're lucky if we all remember to start on the left foot.
Yeah, and as far as marching, you really don't have to have any experience to march with us in the parade. If you can walk and play your instrument at the same time, you're doing great. We're not a precision marching group like sometimes you see in like the Rose Bowl parade and things like that. We just like to walk down the street and provide music in the parade.
Are you in both parades?
Yes, both Juno and Douglas.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds great. How do people get involved if they want to get involved?
Well, we encourage you to come out to our band practice, 7 o'clock Wednesday night at the Faith Lutheran Church in the Valley, or come to one of the concerts.
And if you want some more information, you can send us an email at junocommunityband@gmail.com. We're happy to answer any questions. We also have a website, which is Juno Community Band, and we have our schedule on that as well. So there's lots of ways to get information. And, again, I would just really encourage you to come out and help Juno celebrate the 4th in style. We would love to have at least 25 people in our band. So we're looking for at least 10 more, and we'd love to have 30 more.
What instruments are people playing?
I play clarinet, but we have flutes and clarinets and saxophones and trumpets and sousaphones and, of course, percussion. We can just about take anything anybody has to play.
And I want to encourage people that play like a bass clarinet or a barry sax. They often say, well, I don't march with my instrument, so I can't be in a marching band. But we are also a concert band. We have those two concerts. And so you are welcome to come if you play one of those non-marching instruments, or if you have a wooden clarinet, you don't want to get it wet. We have a covered area to do our performances in.
All right, anything you'd like to add? I might have forgotten to ask.
Again, just we would welcome anybody to come and play with us in the parade. If you can't come to the rehearsals for the concerts, just come to the parade. Come and join us down at the gathering spot down by the bridge on parade morning. We play Stars and Stripes, National Emblem, and Washington Post in the parade, so you just need to know those three tunes. We also have music if you don't have it. And we would also really encourage you, if you're not going to play with us, to come into our concerts down in Marine Park Wednesday and Sunday before the 4th.
Now, Amy, you're the conductor, is that correct?
That's right.
How do you that? You've got to watch the band. Are you walking backwards the whole time?
Oh, yeah. I conduct the concerts. I don't do the marching part of it. We usually get someone else to do that. Yeah, that's pretty hard.
All right, yeah. Thank you for coming down.
Thank you for having us. Look forward to seeing you.
4th of July just wouldn't be complete with those incendiary devices. In the studio with me now is Megan Garrison here to talk about things that are going on this weekend as far as arts go. Megan, thank you for coming by the station today.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
Did you bring any fireworks with you?
I didn't think that would be kosher.
Probably right.
It's good to check, though.
What's coming up this weekend?
So Thursday, one really fun thing tonight is that Kindred Post is having a tiny post office concert. And this is a special celebration edition. It's a pay-as-you-can. It's downtown at their store location. And it's featuring 7 Native artists and various types of performances. So it should be a really fun multimedia thing to go to. Tomorrow we have the very first Rock Around the Block, which is the newest iteration of Food Truck Fridays. We have partnered with the Alaska State Museum, and so there'll be music at the APK Plaza right next door to you guys. And this week is the Capital City Big Band kicking it off. Then we've got food trucks and mosquito markets across the way on the Jack Front Lawn. It looks like we've got a really fun lineup this week. We're excited to host it and do some dancing on the plaza.
Should be a lot of fun. The museum is a great museum. It's nice to go to some place where you look at the museum and say, and that's a museum.
It's gorgeous inside. I'm so happy that it's open and we get to really experience it now. It's been a long time coming and it's beautifully done. So a lot of congratulations to the whole team that worked on that. If you're looking for something else to do on Friday, they've got Cornhole Fridays at the flight deck. So if you need to play some games, go on down to the hangar.
What's Cornhole Friday? I've been thinking it was a band.
No, it's a game where you toss beanbags onto two boards that face each other and you try and get the bag into the hole in the board. It's very competitive and ultra serious. I'm just kidding. So on Saturday, there's a second annual Wild for Conservation 5K that's going on from 8 to 10 if you need to get some running in, and it is dog friendly. I think they're giving away pint glasses to the first 50 people who register. That's put on by the Southeast Alaska Land Trust. And you can register at info@setrust.net. We have the Northwest Coast Arts Market running this whole weekend, and then there's also the second Saturday market at the airport shopping mall, so lots of shopping opportunities. Then we start up with some Pride events. So June is Pride Month, and CEGLA and the Juneau Pride Association has a whole lineup of things. And there's a Two-Spirit Pride reception at Northern Light Church, and the opening ceremony downtown at Northern Light Church. That's at 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. There's going to be speakers and music and performances. It's free. Everyone's welcome. And I think they're hosting a small reception with some snacks, etc. afterwards. Then, of course, there's the symphony. And if you couldn't get tickets to the symphony, then you could go to the Pride Prom, which is at the Rockwell Ballroom. And it features Susu and the Prophets and DJ Manu. Moving on to Sunday, we have Pride Sunday. We've got the weekly ukulele jam at TK McGuire's. We've got the 30th anniversary Pride picnic at Sandy Beach. Pink Pony, which is a LGBTQ comedy troupe from Chicago, and that's at 7 p.m. at Suite 907.
They're coming in tomorrow to talk on it in the afternoon.
Oh, fun. I'm excited to hear that and learn more about them. It looks really funny. Monday, we've got, let's see, a really interesting walk open to everyone. It's by Hospice and Home Care, and it's at Twin Lakes. It's called Good Grief Walks. So if you need some support, there's an open walk there. Makerspace Open Shop happens every Monday, and that's from 6 to 8 p.m. If you haven't checked out the Makerspace, this is a great time to see what it is and how to become a member and use all of their really cool toys and tools they've got. Then we move on to Tuesday. I like the song you were playing. It's Decorate Douglas on Flag Day. So all kinds of stuff with red, white, and blue flowers and flags. Let's see, what else do we have on Tuesday? We've got my Arts Roundtable, which is at the Jack. We've got a couple speakers, and that'll be announced soon. I don't have all the details yet. There's also Open Kickball at Sandy Beach, put on by Juno Pride, and it's called RuPaul's Drag Race, instead of RuPaul's Drag Race.
Got it.
Very cute. Then wrapping it up on Wednesday, we've got our art walk tours, our exhibit is open, Trivia Night, which is Juno Pride inspired at the Imperial, and a weekly old-time music jam at the Alaskan Hotel and Bar.
As usual, a lot of activities.
Yes. Too many things, so little time.
All right, Megan Garrison, thank you so much.
Thank you.
This is Bird Note. Does this raucous laughter sound a little deranged as it rings out above the crash of ocean waves? The voices belong to birds, to a nesting colony of common murres, standing on narrow ledges high on the steep face of a sea cliff. Precarious as their nest site is, common murres nest by the thousands along the Pacific coast, perhaps millions north along the Bering Sea. The chocolate brown murres stand nearly a foot and a half tall, on legs set far back on their bodies. Add to this their sharply pointed bills, and murres look much like the northern equivalent of penguins of the southern hemisphere. Their eggs are specially shaped to survive a narrow cliff ledge. Shaped like a pear, the single large blue egg is pointed at one end and blunt at the other, so it spins on the ledge rather than tumbling into the sea below. The common murre's guttural call carries well over the roar of the waves, a natural laugh track, far richer than human laughter canned for a sitcom. Make a virtual visit to a nesting colony of common murres on our website, birdnote.org. I'm Michael Stein.
Mondays are back at the Diamond Park Aquatic Center, now open Monday through Friday from 6 a.m. until 8 p.m., Saturdays 9 a.m. until 6 p.m., and Sundays noon until 6 p.m. Schedules are available online at juno.org/parkrec/diamondpark. For more information, call Diamond Park Aquatic Center at 586-2782.
Our next speaker is Amanda Babin. Amanda was born and raised in sunny Southern California. She's an identical twin and is one of five siblings. She's lived in Juneau for 3.5 years and doesn't see herself leaving anytime soon. A random fact about Amanda is that she is more likely to forget her cell phone at home than her water bottle. She takes it everywhere, and it calms her when she's nervous. Maybe I need a water bottle? Speaking in front of all of you makes her very nervous, so please welcome to the stage Amanda and her water bottle.
Hello. This story is from my childhood. It took place when I was age 9. My identical twin was also age 9. My younger brother was 7. My older brother was 11. My eldest sister was off at college. And then my parents were however old parents are, because I don't know. And so growing up, we had a family dog. And at age 9, our family dog passed away. We learned about dog years and how our dog was really old and it was okay. And shortly after our family dog passed, cats started showing up. I think they were already in the neighborhood before, but we didn't notice them because we had a dog in our backyard, so they didn't go there. And we started asking Mom and Dad, oh, whose cats are those? And they said, those are no one's cats. Those are stray cats. And we're like, well, who feeds them? And she's like, we don't know. We're like, well, we should feed them. And we convinced Mom and Dad to leave a bowl of food and a bowl of water outside for the stray cats. We quickly became known as the cat house in the neighborhood because I like to say they picked us. We also conveniently had a small field behind ourselves that is still vacant to this day, aka the litter box. The one rule was that we did have some stray cats that were wild and did not let us near them, and then some of them became friendly and they were allowed in the house. But the rule was, at the end of the night, they go out of the house, and that's their time. So as we, you know, adopted these stray cats, we learned about how it's important to spay and neuter cats, and so that they don't become overpopulated. And I remember when our first cat had kittens, and she was pretty friendly, so we got to play with the kittens, and we thought it was the best. And we learned that it's a better time to give away stray cats is when they're kittens. People like kittens better than wild cats. So we had to give away 3 of the kittens, and we got to keep one. But the next time, another mother gave birth to more kittens, and this one was not so friendly. And so our goal was we still needed to spay the mom and give the kittens good homes, so we had to catch them. And we went with a brilliant method any cartoon would approve. We went and got a piece of wood, a cardboard box, a stick, and a string. And we were determined to catch these cats so we could take them and get spayed and neutered. And we put 4 kids in a bush, and we thought we were going to be very successful. Turns out 4 kids in a bush is not quiet. So slowly we grew bored. Except for my youngest brother. He's very determined, still to this day a very persistent person. So he was going to catch a cat that night. So it was just him in the bush, which was much better probably, but we kind of moved on, and lo and behold, 30 minutes later, we heard hooting and hollering, and he had caught the mama cat. He was so excited. So my dad goes, and he picks up the piece of wood in the box and brings it to our spare bathroom, where the cat was going to stay for the night. Put some food, put some water, good to go. As he's kind of tipping the box and running for the door so that the cat doesn't get out, we found out he did not catch the mama cat. He also did not catch the baby kittens. Turns out he had caught other animals that eat our food. It was a very large, pissed off possum. Equally pissed off was my mother. Turns out possums can break a lot of things. And they hiss, and it was not happy to be in our bathroom. And we were not exactly happy either, but we had to figure out how to get the possum out of the bathroom. Our first plan of attack was to open the window and take off the screen and put a little piece of hamburger patty from dinner at the window. More things broke. I remember glass was not my mom's favorite. when I heard that sound, I knew we were a little bit in trouble. So we went to Plan B. And Plan B was to build a the bathroom was located on about a 10-foot hall right by the front door. So the bathroom was to the left. The end of the hall was my sister's room, a small closet, and about a 6-foot entryway, so the span of my arms, and that entered to the living room. So our game plan was to blockade the 6 feet. So shut the door. His only exit was outside. So as the four kids, we basically got to build a fort. And we used tables and chairs and couch cushions. I think we had a piece of luggage, so we were stoked. We were fort building. We got this. Meanwhile, my dad was suiting up because he was the one in charge of motivating the possum towards the door. We actually had a roller hockey stick from when my older sister played roller hockey, but that doesn't have much padding. If we had hockey gear, we probably would have been a little better. But he just put on as much clothes as he could, and then that included puffy snow clothes. I don't know, about 20 years ago in Juneau, maybe you had better clothes, but everything in Southern California was like, pff, you were puffy. So he put on as much as he could, gloves, he had a hockey stick, a trash can lid, and that was, we were good to go. So, we did try opening the door in hopes that maybe the possum would just find its way out, but it seemed pretty content in our warm bathroom with food and water. So I remember my dad just going in the bathroom, and he's eking, and possum's hissing, and it's only 3 feet to the door from the bathroom. And he's, like, hockey gearing, we're watching from behind the luggage, and we get the possum out of the bathroom. And we're cheering. We're like, yay! And that was the time we had the possum in the bathroom. We learned a lot from this story. We still learned we had to get the kittens and give them good homes. We had to spay and neuter. We had to spay mom. But we also learned that sometimes it pays to have the right equipment. So from then on, we still, in our years, spayed and neutered many wild cats. My dad still has, maybe he has Angel's cat. I don't know. It's California. But we still have all of them, but we rent the professional traps now from the vet, and we retired the box and stick method.
That was Amanda Babin, recorded live during April's Lunumus show. It's just about the end of the hour in the June afternoon for today. The forecast for tonight, partly cloudy skies early in the evening, then becoming mostly cloudy skies, low temperatures around 48 degrees. Forecast for Friday, decreasing clouds with high temperatures around 65 degrees. Friday night, increasing clouds with isolated showers, low temperatures around 47 degrees. Looks like mostly cloudy skies on Saturday with a slight chance of rain. Sunday, cloudy skies with a chance of rain and high temperatures around 459 degrees. Tomorrow on June afternoon, Lori Scandling will be your host. She'll talk with James Wyckoff about the community garage sale scheduled for Saturday, June 25th. We'll get a preview of Sunday's Pride event with the Pink Pony Comedy Troupe at Writer's Almanac. Burned Out Music and More tomorrow, 3 on June afternoon, RKTOO, repeated at 4 on KRNN, and on demand by KTOO.org. To remind you that live television coverage of Celebration on 360 North and 360north.org began yesterday at 6 p.m. and will continue until 10 p.m. tonight through Saturday. For more Celebration news coverage, go to ktmo.org/celebration.
This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast.